Buckle up. It's expected to be a wild NHL offseason. It's the Friday edition of Hockey Central here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart with you today on Twitter, at the Golden Muzzy, at Stu Monroe. Producer Matt Marchese, as well as technical ops Dylan Brown and Lance Kennedy along for the ride as well. In about five from now, Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca will drop by. We'll get his thoughts on the Stanley Cup final, as well as the big news in Leafsland, and it could correlate perfectly to Seattle's expansion draft coming up in the next week and a half or so. But Stewie, Travis Dermott, a two-year extension. What'd you make of that?
Well, first of all, good afternoon, Nick. It's good to be hosting, co-hosting this show with you here. I know we co-host our own show on WhatsApp group chat, but I like the deal. I like the deal with Dermott. And he's one of those guys. I think when he gets a real, top four, top five, defenseman opportunity, I think the deal is going to be a very, very good value. But who knows? This could be a sign and give him an extra year because he might be on his way to Seattle. But I like this deal. He's a serviceable defenseman, and he's one of those guys. If he's in a different market with a different opportunity, I would not be surprised if he's a 25, 30 point D-man.
Yeah, honestly, I concur with you. I think the word I would use following this signing is flexibility, right? There's the potential, as you mentioned, that it could be Seattle he ends up. I think it gives them cap certainty, which maybe they like. I think another option that Toronto can do is trade Travis Dermott, because this time of year, as you know, in the offseason, everybody needs defensemen. And the certainty of having a guy 5'6", and he's just 24. It's easy to forget Travis Dermott's just 24, but the potential that he can excel and exceed that contract, I think, would be something teams would look at. And it's also one of those things, Stewie, if he stays in Toronto, for a team that's paying those, the core four that much money, to pay a guy like Travis Dermott $1.5 million is not too shabby.
Yeah, it's not too bad. And people forget, people just thought that a player like Justin Hall just turned into the stud D-man, where he was in the conversation for best Leaf, I think, early in the season on the back end there. But remember, the season before, he was sitting in the press box for 60 games the whole entire season. So it's different to evaluate a player once they get an opportunity. But I think Dermott, he's still in that middle ground where he's playing some games, he's getting some minutes, some games he's not. Give him 17, 18 minutes for 20-game segment, see what he can do, and I would not be surprised if he ran some numbers.
And that's a great point, because I just think it clicks at different points in times for different players. Forwards maybe a bit different than defensemen. I think Rasmus Sandin's a perfect indication of that. He came out of nowhere this season, starts clicking game after game, starts producing and doing his thing. Who's to say, still just 24 and Travis Dermott, and I think at that cap hit, you just can't go wrong. And I'll just be very, very curious to see what happens over the next couple of weeks. Not to put you on the spot, Stewie, but I think you have a pretty firm indication of what the keepers could look like in the expansion draft for the Maple Leafs. I got Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, obviously. And on the back end, Muzzin, Riley, Brody. And I think, honestly, I'm trying to quantify what makes more sense and love to get your opinion. Justin Hall's 29. He's a UFA in 2023. Would you prefer Hall at that $2 million cap hit or Travis Dermott, who's 24?
I think it was Travis Dermott. I like Hall as well, but I think Dermott, there's some games where he was playing some good hockey, I think, too. And, everyone's saying, well, Kerfoot's out the door, but you saw what he did once he got some opportunities, when he got bumped up to top 6 minutes, what he can actually do. So for them to say, we'll just lose this guy and it won't be a big deal. But now you're losing a centerman. Centermen are at a premium right now in the National Hockey League. So you need good centers, capable centers. Is he a great guy at 22 minutes a night? No. But if he gets an opportunity, playing up and down that lineup, I think Kerfoot can be a very serviceable player. So for the Leaf Nation to say, let's run him out of town, no big deal. He's one of those players I think you'd miss once he's gone.
And we're going to find out soon enough, of course, with July 17th being the first of many big days here in the offseason. 5 Eastern time is when the protection list will go out to the Seattle Kraken, and ultimately we'll find out who the Maple Leafs elect to protect and to put forward in a potential draft here for the Seattle Kraken. As we welcome in Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca, it's Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central. Luke, maybe you can piggyback off that conversation, obviously, as we get into the convo about Travis Dermott and that extension. I'm sure you've had a go at sort of the expansion list for the Maple Leafs. Would it be Hall or would it be Dermott on your list?
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, you know what? I'd put Hall. I think the Leafs will go 4-4-1, the big four forwards. Obviously, their best three defensemen, and I think they would go with Hall. I think, if you look at the role guys played, if you look at lefty-righty balance, he's the only right shot there until they re-sign Zach Bogosian or make a trade or sign someone in free agency. So that would be my guess. But this gives them a little bit more flexibility. The Travis Dermott extension is pretty interesting. The fact that they, at least now they have that option. But I think it makes Travis more attractive as a guy to keep, but also I think it makes him more attractive as a trade chip or a guy that could be dangled in front of Seattle. I think one thing that sometimes people forget when they think of the Leafs and the Kraken is Ron, the Leafs are just one part of a bigger puzzle, right? This isn't happening in a vacuum. So Ron Francis is looking through 30 teams and saying, okay, I like Travis Dermott, but is he one of the best 6, 7, 8 defensemen that are going to be available? You know, there's and what are the forwards available? So maybe Kerfoot makes more sense. He's a guy that can play on that Kraken team right away. You know that. I thought he showed really well in the playoffs. But it's going to be fascinating to see when those lists come out and we see who's been left out there in the wind.
There's been some talk, and I'm not sure it's on this show because I would not have that Riley might be exposed. What are the odds of that happening?
Oh.
And I just don't get the fact that people are saying, yeah, you know what, let's get Riley out of town. But he's one of those guys, another guy that you're going to miss him when he's gone if he decides not to re-sign with Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, my goodness, Stewie. No, you don't expose.
You don't. Is that the good show? I think it was the good show.
Oh, yeah. Blame it on those guys. Now, could he be dangled in a trade if they want to make a change? I think absolutely. I think this is a really critical summer for Morgan Riley. You're not going to lose him for nothing. But I feel like the Leafs have gotten into this pattern of walking their guys to free agency, even though there's a market for them. We just saw that with Zach Hyman and Freddie Anderson. Before, we saw it with guys like Bozak and JVR. And I get it. You're keeping them as an own rental, and you know you're going for it every year. But Morgan Riley is a pretty important piece. You have to know, are we going to extend this guy? Is he going to be a permanent fixture in Toronto? Or do we make a move? If we're not committed to him and we think his price is going to go through the roof, his value is never going to be higher than it is right now. You know, and I think that's a really tough decision. But I think they need to take some ownership of these decisions instead of just kind of sitting on their hands and waiting to the end of the year. And then you're giving all the leverage over to the player. So I think it's really important that Dubas and company find out what Riley's intentions are. What's his price point? How much of a discount is he willing to take? I know he loves being a Maple Leaf, but you know, you also have to consider he's watched a lot of his friends get paid big time. He's been fine value, and usually this is his one chance to knock it out of the park.
Chatting with Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca here in Hockey Central, Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart. So what would you say Morgan Riley is? Like, I totally agree, by the way, with where you're coming from. Like, I think Morgan Riley is more important to this team than people think. You know, I think he means a lot, obviously, in that dressing room. There's a reason why he was involved in that conversation for the captaincy a couple of years back. But at this stage in his career, what do you make of Morgan Riley, the hockey player?
I think he has a lot of, I think you know what he is. He's an amazing skater. He makes a great first pass. He's an incredible guy when he's the fourth man up in the rush and provides that offense. He logs a ton of minutes. He's played the most minutes of anyone last season. I actually thought he improved towards the end of the year and had a really good showing in the postseason. You know, and he's a heart and soul guy. He's a leader in that room. He's the longest tenured Leaf. I remember Mike Babcock saying, I'll never forget, he said, no one loves being a Toronto Maple Leaf more than Morgan Riley. Like, he is entrenched there. So I think it would be hard for him to leave. But he has defensive flaws, and you know, and he's not a big bruising defenseman. So you look at the teams that made it deep in the playoffs, and you might like the guy, but you might have to be thinking, do we need to change our mix here? Do we have enough of the right type of defenseman? And that's a decision that they have to make and go forward. Do they need to tweak their identity back there a little bit? But I think he's a fine player. He's not a number one in the way that Victor Hedman's a number one, but for my money, he's still the best defenseman on the Toronto Maple Leafs.
all is quiet on the Zach Hyman front, almost too quiet. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And if he doesn't resign in Toronto, where is the potential landing spots for him? And what do you think his cap hit's going to be next season?
Yeah, it's a fascinating one with Hyman. I think Edmonton has to be circling a guy like that. I think he fits in exactly the type of player they need in their top six. You know, imagine Connor McDavid having a workhorse like that next to him. You know, he's already proven that he can play with elite talent. The question for Hyman is, are you willing to, you know, he loves being in Toronto, homegrown guy, but he took a discount coming out as an RFA. Does he want to take another discount when he's working his tail off every single night? Now he's producing more and more each season. He's seen a lot of the people next to him in that dressing room get, you know, very well compensated. And this is basically his last chance to get set himself up financially. He's a smart guy. So how much are you willing to take less in cap hit and extend term? So I know it seems like he's heading out the door, but I still am not convinced that's a foregone conclusion. I wonder if he could take a deal structured kind of like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, where you extend it to 8 years in order to get the cap hit down and a little bit more reasonable and take advantage of the window that the Leafs have to contend. Because if you let Hyman walk, you're going to have to replace him with someone similar. And that's tough to do because in free agency, the prices are high. It's like, do you stick with the guy that you know and that loves being there? Or do you take your chances and let one of your hardest workers and most consistent players just walk for nothing? So you have to get creative, I think, by extending term to keep the cap hit down. But even then, it's a question mark.
Yeah, and unsurprisingly, at the beginning, it was sort of a PR battle, right, when the Leafs were eliminated, right, went back and forth between the Hyman camp and the Maple Leafs, and it's gone quiet as of late. And I think ultimately they will circle back. Who knows if they come to a deal or not, but we know, you know, Zach Hyman's a local product, loves being a Maple Leaf, so very, very intrigued, and you're right on that front. Again, talking with Luke Fox at Sportsnet.ca, Nick Alberg and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central. So there's been a lot of names already linked to the Maple Leafs here in the offseason. It just gets underway. I know Elliot Friedman earlier today linking them to Tyler Bertuzzi of Detroit. Knowing that, like, you know, names will be thrown out there. It is wacky season in the NHL world, as we all know. How creative do you expect this team to be here in the offseason, Luke?
Oh, when haven't they been creative, right?
You're right.
You know, like this is a team that prides itself on thinking outside the box. It doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. But you know, they get creative. You know, you just have to look at some of the trades they made, like, you know, bringing in Riley Nash and not even playing him until the playoffs. I don't think it was a good move, but that's the type of outside the box thinking in terms of trying to maximize cap dollars and finding creative ways to build your roster. The Bertuzzi thing is pretty interesting. Yeah. I heard Elliot's comments, and his style of game, you know, crash the net, bruising guy, younger than Hyman. It makes a lot of sense that way. The one thing is he did just have back surgery recently. So you kind of have to wonder how that recovery is going. It was, not unlike Eichel in that he originally got diagnosed, tried to come back, needed to go get a second opinion, decided to have surgery. So he had kind of a frustrating year last season, which was coming off a year where he was invited to the All-Star game and seemed to be this prized core player for the Red Wings. And then if you go back a year, he went right through with arbitration with Detroit. Now, that doesn't mean that the sides have completely soured on each other. But if you go all the way through arbitration, sometimes that's a good indication that there could be a bit of a rift there and that there might not be a long-term marriage in terms of, you know, Steve Yzerman and Tyler Bertuzzi being on the same page and as far as a long-term commitment. And he's RFA again, so they only settled on 1 year. So if you're making a move for Tyler Bertuzzi, you have to think through, okay, what's he going to cost in arbitration or a settlement right before that?
Okay, Luke, I'm going to let you put your GM hat on for a couple seconds here, and you're not allowed to break up the big four. That's the only rule here. But with regards to the backup goaltender situation next year, do you bring back Freddie Anderson? Do you go a 1B option? What kind of names are you hearing out there, and who would you bring up to be partner with Jack Campbell next season?
You know what? I feel like the Freddie ship has sailed. I know they're keeping the lines of communication open. And when Anderson gave his exit interview with us reporters, he said, you know, like, we'll talk and we'll see. I just feel like it's time to move on and start fresh. I'd like to see someone a little bit more proven to be Campbell's partner. I don't think, you know, you can put all your eggs in one basket. I know he was phenomenal and he had a great ride and even had like a slightly better save percentage than Carey Price in the playoffs. I think he had a phenomenal, you know, kind of breakout campaign. But I just think you need a little bit more stability there. And the good thing I would say is it might be a bit of a buyer's market. There seems to be a lot of goalies out there. So they can go through the list and see what works. I like Darcy Kuemper a lot. If you want some names, I wonder about a guy like John Gibson in Anaheim. You'd have to, you know, that guy has some term on his deal, but he's a proven stud goalie on a team that suddenly changed directions and is in the midst of a rebuild. So you'd have to get creative in terms of a trade there. But I think it's one of those wait and see and let the expansion draft pass and then reassess the landscape. But there's going to be some goalies out there. But I like Kuemper more than a guy like, say, Chris Drieger or someone like that.
Well, it's funny. You know, you talk about creativity, and certainly this is a salary cap world, and it's a flat cap world right now. And I just love the prospect, and I understand it's tough when you don't have a proven guy that maybe win in the Stanley Cup playoffs, although I had no problem with Jack Campbell in that series against Montreal. You have him, a mil and a half, maybe just slightly over next season. You bring in somebody else, you know, $2-3 million. I think it opens up just way more avenues elsewhere on your roster. But it's sort of a tightrope act, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no perfect goalie out there. There's only one Vasilevsky, right? Like most teams have to get by on a tandem now. You know, the select few have the number one stud goalie, but there's not 32 of them in the league. It's kind of like number one defenseman. So you have to, you know, weigh your options. You got to go weigh experience versus cap hit, versus, you know, length of the deal that they're on versus their injury history. There's a lot of factors. So I don't think there's one perfect solution out there. You gotta weigh it all. I do think their goal will be to get their combined duo, at or lower than what it was with Freddie there. I know there's a window for them to go back to Freddie, but it just feels like they need to make some changes and change the mix. I'm not a big fan of going with an Anderson Campbell duo again.
Looking forward to next season, going back probably to the Atlantic Division. Is it safe to say Tampa Bay is the favorite of that division? And where would you see the Leafs slotting? And do you have Montreal making the playoffs next year?
Oh, that's a good one, Stewie. Yeah.
Twitter's listening. Twitter's listening.
Always. Back-to-back champs, I'm not betting against them. I know that they're going to lose Barkley and Goudreau and maybe a Tyler Johnson. Their depth won't be quite the same, but the way those guys draft and develop, like, you see Joseph come up and contribute, like, two beautiful assists in the Stanley Cup final, like, the depth of that team, the fact they still have the best goalie in the world, arguably the best defenseman in the world, I'm not betting against them. So I have them as the favorites to win the Atlantic. And that division's going to be a monster because I expect Boston to spend in the offseason. Florida looks like it's a team on the rise. You know, I'm not having Ottawa's playoff team, but I think there's a chance they could win more games, or like a greater percentage of their games going into this season. I think Montreal's in tough to make the playoffs. You know, if I have to choose, I'll go out on a limb and say no. I'm just, you know, they got to re-sign Deneau. Weber and Price will be a year older. Is Tyler Toffoli going to have a crazy season again? I don't know. I know Cole Caulfield is an emerging game breaker. Suzuki, it really impressed me. I just don't know if there's enough goal scoring on that team.
And of course, greetings to our great listeners in Buffalo. Can't wait to see what that team does. Just a couple more here with Luke Fox. You're just fresh off covering the Stanley Cup final. I think you make a great point that's not being talked about enough is the drafting and development in Tampa. Everybody's talking about the 18 mil. We're talking about Vasilevsky's chest protector, Kucherov's comments. Like, it goes on and on. And I think we're missing the point that they built this juggernaut from scratch and their core pieces are guys they nailed in the draft. Having said that, from a Maple Leafs perspective, Luke, how much do you think this organization can learn from the Tampa model of just keep going back to the well with your nucleus in place?
Well, that's what they're doing, right? Yeah. Like, Shanahan and Dubas are going to live or die by this core. That's their mandate. And I would say that, you know, Kyle's mentioned before that Tampa's kind of the model that he looks at. You know, and there's evidence with, you know, winning a Calder Cup, bringing a lot of those guys up to the big team, bringing your Calder Cup winning coach up to be your NHL coach. There's a lot of similarities that go beyond just the color scheme of their uniforms. The trick is Tampa set a better internal cap, right? Like Stamkos by choosing to stay there, the benefit of state tax and all that, but by him choosing to stay there, Hedman followed suit, Kucherov followed suit, Vasilevsky followed suit. They didn't push the cap the way that Leafs superstars push the cap. So that allowed them to get, you know, a middle class of middle six forwards that can all play. The Leafs' problem is they've spent so much on the big guys and their internal cap is so out of whack that they're forced to, you know, get Wayne Simmons to take, minimal money, get Jason Spezza to take minimal money. And yes, those guys are great fourth liners, but I'm worried about the Leafs' third line. How do you fill out a third line that's competitive? Because Tampa's third line was just monstrous. They're just they could score, they could shut guys down. And that's, I think, going to be the trick, just the way the Leafs have structured their salary cap.
Yeah, so based on that theory, how are they going to be able to, you know, afford a, you know, a Taylor Hall who's been linked to the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I'd be shocked at this point. I also heard Tarasenko out there, right?
But
he's,
oh wow,
what
he said? Someone floated that out. I don't know if it's you know, if it's just number, it just floated out there. I mean, he's on the block, but you know, he's the type of guy the Leafs would like. It's just, you know, where are you going to fit $7.5 million, right? That's the trick. It's like you have to pillage the bargain bin unless you do something drastic. Trade Morgan Riley, let Hyman walk. Like these are the types of moves that you have to do if you want to fill out that third line with decent play. It's a give and take. So you either pillage the bargain bin or you do something more drastic.
Yeah, I just want to circle back as we wrap here. Is it your expectation that Jack Campbell's going to get an extension too?
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't heard anything though. Nothing I can report on that. I know he loves it here. Like, he absolutely loves it here. And I think they're big on him and we're really happy with the progress he took. I think he's hard on himself, and I wonder about his demeanor, if he's a bit too hard on himself and he doesn't have that, you know, just let the mistakes go the way like a Carey Price does. And I know it's something that he's working on, but, you know, he had a fabulous season. He really impressed, and I wouldn't see any reason why they wouldn't at least explore staying together. Like, he absolutely loved being a Maple Leaf.
We could talk Leafs for days with Luke. Really appreciate your time, and no doubt we'll talk down the road here in the offseason.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. That is Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca. And, you know, it's just fascinating, Stewie, what direction they elect to go. Because I always like to say, and a lot of people do as well, at the end of the day, only one team is truly content and happy with their season. That's the team who wins the Stanley Cup. And I know it still stings for Maple Leafs Nation to not even get out of the first round again. But what would your focus be if you're Dubas and company to better this team for next season?
I think they got to find guys, especially on their bottom six, that outperform their cap hits, right? And you look at guys like Goudreau and Coleman, who are at like, what, 900,000 and 1.8 to come in and step in. So that's why I'm saying guys like Wayne Simmonds that come in at 900, you know, that's not a guy that gets you to the playoffs. That's a guy that scores a big goal in round two or round three. So you need to round out guys that are gamers, that have a bit of a pedigree, that have been a couple rounds, and know what it takes to win. And you're seeing guys like Staal in Montreal and Perry in Montreal who had some success as they got later on the playoffs because they're pros and they know what it takes to go all the way. So I'm looking at bringing in some veteran guys, but at the same time, I'd like to see a guy like Sandin get some major minutes. Get Liljegren in there. Get some of these young guys in there. You're looking at all these other teams that are having success. Their young guys are having major roles. And you look at this team too. You know, where is Nick Robertson? You know, we were talking about him last year stepping in a top six role, scoring 20 goals with that shot, and we haven't heard a peep since. So you got to find a way to stay competitive with your veteran guys, but sprinkle in these young guys and give them a role as well.
And certainly the Lightning were just a different animal. Even look at game, you know, five of the series, Ross Colton scores the, you know, ends up being the Stanley Cup winning goal. There was just depth on depth on depth on depth. You know, they even traded some guys who were quality prospects for them. It's just that the pipeline of drafting, I think, is overlooked when it comes to Tampa and the success this organization has had over the last 7 or 8 years. And now back-to-back Stanley Cups for the Lightning. So at the break, other side, I want Stewie to put his GM hat on. Once again, we love when he does that on this show. We'll mull some names here potentially for the Maple Leafs to go after. We'll talk about the offseason in general, because it sounds crazy. And it's already getting to that point with names like Seth Jones out there, Tarasenko, obviously Jack Eichel, Duncan Keith. It's going to be crazy. And I'd love to get Stewie's perspective as a former player, trade season and the impact that has on the psyche of an NHL player wherever they're at in their NHL career. So we'll get to that as we roll on here. It's Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart on Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, we're back here on the Friday edition of Hockey Central. Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart with you at the Golden Muzzy, at Stu Monroe on Twitter. Stewie, I'm sure you've heard the news that we're moving forward into phase three, stage three, whatever we like, step three, coming up next Friday. Will you be going to the theaters to see Space Jam 2?
No. I have cable, and I have Amazon Fire Stick, and I watch all the movies I need to watch on there. So I'm still going to be playing it safe. I'm back at the hockey arena skating the kids. Yeah. So if I'm taking a risk, it's on the arenas, developing the next Taylor Halls out here.
I like that. I like that. And you must be really, really fired up because what? And you can you do more than practice, I guess? Or you can start practicing, I guess, in step three?
No.
No?
Only
no.
Non-contact practices, hockey school, okay. Go through the danglers. That's it. No gameplay or practice or a game situation play at all.
We're on the mend, though, and that's the most important part. And on that conversation, too, you know, I was talking to Dylan Brown off air. Where are you on sequels, Stewie, like 20 years later, right? Because as you know, I was fired up for Coming to America. It was never going to be the same. I don't think it was that bad, to be quite honest. But what's your expectation for Space Jam 2? I don't know how I feel. I know people are discounting it already.
Yeah, I think that's a classic that you can't touch, and Michael Jordan. I know there's comparisons between LeBron James. That's one of the movies that you don't touch. But again, we'll continue the debate on Twitter. But Coming to America was a classic for sure. I love all the Rush Hours. I'm going to be lining up in 20 years to see Fast and Furious 36 when they're in space fighting dinosaurs. I'm lining up. So I have some you can do some sequels. Others, you got to leave it alone. Space Jam's a classic. Leave it alone.
No, that's fair. I'm with you on that front. And I was just more in intrigued by the CGI in this era in 2021 to see what it would be like. But I'm totally with you. That's one of my favorite movies, and I just think you don't touch it. But nonetheless, we roll on. A bit of news and notes here. Again, it's going to be relatively quiet, I think, over the next couple days as teams decompress from what was a very crazy, unpredictable NHL season. The first buyout window is open, so look for that in the next couple days. But then after this weekend, it's just going to get hectic with Seattle and all that. Should mention as well sort of some news and notes. And especially including the Montreal Canadiens organization, that maybe raising eyebrows is too strong of a phrase, but Joel Bouchard, who was with their AHL team, has been named the head coach of the San Diego Gulls. And, You know, it's always fascinating when you hire a high-profile name to, I guess, sort of start and groom in the AHL when you're the NHL coach. But, of course, the NHL, you're just thinking about winning at this point.
Yeah, and I just saw that, too. Kevin Dineen's out as the head coach in San Diego, too. So I'm wondering now, if are they grooming him now to be eventually the head coach in Anaheim? Because we know there's probably going to be some changes coming there in the next year or two. But, again, it's good to have good young coaches getting an opportunity. I like seeing that. I like seeing new guys come in, new blood.
Me too.
Fresh blood with different perspectives.
Shout out to Brad Larsen, of course, now with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So Joel Bouchard now with the San Diego Gulls. It is a sort of a virtual locker room cleanout day as well for the Montreal Canadiens. Stewie, I know you were looking forward to finding out if Philippe Deneau's got any sponsorship so far with any pizza joints. He does not, but he's open to opportunities now.
Yeah, and there was some reports earlier that he turned down a five-year, $30 million deal. And my advice, if I'm his agent, take all the money when you can get it. So I'm not sure what his market's going to be. Again, he's a great two-way forward, but he's more so on the defensive side. And, you know, if you're going to be a $6 million man, and you got to bring some offense. So I'm sure that's in his repertoire. But $6 million for a two-way guy, I don't think there's going to be a lot of teams lining up for those services. He's found some success in Montreal. I'd find a way to get a deal done with the red, white, and blue.
It's fascinating to me because I totally comprehend the conversation. And quite frankly, I think Dano did a pretty excellent job all season long. Lost in sort of the hoopla was the job that Montreal did in general on Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, who had two unbelievable offensive seasons. But you're totally right. I don't know where you go in negotiations as an agent with a team like Montreal, considering he played 22 playoff games and scored one goal. You know, where do you draw the line, Stewie, is my question when it comes to paying a forward, considering that output just not good enough. A couple more goals, who knows where this season goes for Montreal.
For sure. And again, people aren't really criticizing his offensive play because he's only at a $3 million cap pick. Could you imagine he's in Toronto at 5.5 and he's got two goals come Christmas? You know, you'd be doing memes about him every other day. So
probably.
When you get into that stratosphere and you're in that upper cap limit, you got to start producing. And again, he's a great two-way player. I'm sure every team would love a Philippe Deneau. But if you're, you know, typically a third-line team centerman on most teams, you know, you're sort of pricing yourself out of most markets.
I always look forward to the conclusion of a season and you find out sort of the injuries. We found out a fractured rib for Nikita Kucherov. My goodness, him with a fractured rib, still one of the best players on the planet. But Jeff Petrie, Dracula, a.k.a. Dracula, if you will, for Jeff Petrie, says his bloodshot eyes in the playoffs were a result of him passing out when doctors reset his broken pinky finger. And I can just hashtag hockey players, Stewie. Like, that's incredible to me.
Yes, and when you guys are watching this World Cup Finals and you're seeing a guy take a dive after a guy steps on the back of his heel, please remember that. And that just shows the different type of breed hockey players are. And I'm sure he said, put me right back in after he came to, but it was definitely a scary sight. And I saw the memes there too, but I knew that was from something that had to be something pretty serious. So it's good to see that it wasn't too bad, but it was a good entertainment for a couple nights with the memes that I was seeing online.
You're so right, and you were in and still are in the hockey player fraternity in the NHL. I mean, what goes on in the conversation behind the scenes for NHL players? I don't know who it was in Major League Baseball, sat out like 2 weeks with like a stubbed toe. Like the injuries are ridiculous, and these guys, and I know they're supreme at what they do, but for some reason, Stewie, hockey players are just a different breed. It's like a different mentality. I don't care what I have, I'm playing in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I had one major injury, and I got hit from behind from Mike Commodore, and I dislocated my wrist. And the first thing I was saying as my wrist is dangling on, held on by my skin, was, how long am I out? How long am I out? I want to come back. I want to come back. And the doctor's looking at me like, dude, like, your career might be done here. But he's like, you know, it's not too bad. It's only about 12 weeks. And I'm like, my career's done, 12 weeks. Little did I know it was done for 6 months. So it's just a different breed that, you know, players, they play injured, they play hurt. They want to get back and help their team any way possible. So I'm not surprised that you're seeing guys playing with broken ribs, broken fingers, broken fibulas, excuse me. It's just a different breed that these hockey players are.
It really is a different mentality, and I can only wonder what that means to a teammate, right? Like, you look at any of these injuries, any injury we talk about ever in the hockey world, what it means to a teammate that, hey, this guy, this woman is willing to go through a wall for me. Like, it must be so uplifting for an organization when you find out news like this, knowing that this person will do anything to help the team. I love that.
Yeah, and you're seeing the Tampa Bay Lightning, who's probably one of the most skilled team. You have a teammate that literally breaks a bone in his leg, not his foot. Mm. And if that was me, I'm like, I don't think I'm blocking any more shots for the rest of the series. Yeah. I don't want that to be me. But you're seeing guys like Goudreau and Coleman dive head first. So that just shows the type of sacrifice that it takes to win the Stanley Cup. So there's other teams out there that want to be contenders, but are you really going to do what it takes, whatever it takes, like some of these teams that have success year in, year out?
Alec Martinez is another prime example of that with the Vegas Golden Knights. The phrase making headlines when the Maple Leafs were eliminated, killer instinct. You know, I think it's so difficult, and you guys have talked about this almost ad nauseum on this show, but how do you quantify that? Because I think you make excellent points. You talk about the depth guys, but I think you look at Tampa, it's the big boys who are willing to block shots too. Like, how do you quantify from a Maple Leafs perspective, this is what we need to, you know, show that killer instinct and finishing abilities? Because that's my major league takeaway from the last couple years for Tampa, Stewie. And we know the numbers. What are they, 14-0 following a loss in back-to-back, Stanley Cup playoffs. They've lost two games in two cup finals. They just have that supreme ability to close out teams and finish them off. And certainly we saw that missing when the Maple Leafs were up 3-1 against the Habs.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of breakdowns when you're up 3-1, or there's certain points of games where you just, you know, lag. And when you mm-hmm. have that killer instinct, every player is dialed in. And it's not about out of fear, but just the accountability that they have from the coaching staff, knowing, hey, you know what? I have to perform and do my job every single night. And it's not about numbers, right? No one mentioned anything about Cirelli not putting up numbers. No one said anything about Hedman, because the team was doing well as a group. And every single guy had their moment. And you look at Matthew Joseph had a couple big moments in the finals. Blake Coleman, Yanni Gourde, Stamkos, Kucherov, all these other guys that aren't just the stars of the team having big moments, and that's what it's about. So when I'm looking at this Leaf team, all the blame was on Marner and Matthews. I understand that too, but a real Stanley Cup contending team, you have other guys stepping up and carrying and picking up the slack when their top guys aren't going. So I know these top guys, that's the saying, the top guys get you two, the other guys get you through. You need that, you know, 20 men stepping up as a group, and that's what the killer instinct is.
Are you a believer in the clutch factor? You know, I always like to bring up, and I've said this on Leafs Nation before, growing up, I played competitive baseball, and for big-time games, I just couldn't get rid of the nerves. Like, I'd step in the batter's box, I knew I was facing a stud, and I would just get nervous. I would start to shake. Like, I can't be the only one who feels that way. I do feel there is sort of a clutch factor to people where they could calm their nerves. And I'm sure there's players you've played with, it's like, wow, you wouldn't even tell this guy's playing in a game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. Do you think you can develop that clutch factor?
I think so. It's almost like a boxer. You know, when a boxer, they tell mm-hmm. you to keep your arms up. And if you don't keep your arms up, what happens? You get punched in the face. And that's what happened to this Toronto Maple Leaf the last couple of years. They've been getting punched in the face. And I'm sure they're sick and tired of getting punched in the face and hearing about it on the media, where now it's something that's embedded in them, saying, hey, you know what? We're going to have to develop this because we're sick and tired of hearing this. So I would not be surprised to see Toronto be at the top of the division next year, just based on the feeling that they had, knowing that this was their one chance to go all the way and they squandered it. I think they're going to come back, and it's going to make them that much better. And remember, and I know these guys, their top guys are paid a lot. They're young guys. They're young guys. I remember at 25, you think I was worried about winning? No, I'm like, hey, where are we going after the game, boys, here? You know, so
Phillips Arena, where are you at, right?
Yeah, we're going to Queen Street. You got to develop that. It's developed, but again, you got to have that proper culture, and that's why they're bringing in these older guys to sort of show these guys this is the way to do it. So time is running out with this group, but I would not be surprised to see, you know, if they're contending next year just based on the experience that they got this year.
I always knew we'd get back to a conversation about Phillips Arena and the Atlanta Thrashers, but we'll leave that for another day. It's Nick sure. Alberga and Anthony Stewart here on Hockey Central talking clutch factor. But I think it's a pretty astute point, because I think you can even draw loose comparables. I understand the depth is not what Tampa's is, but there was a long, long period of time where everybody doubted Tampa, and I understand they won a cup, you know, 20, 15 years ago, and I get that. But this nucleus, this team, we didn't know if they could finally get the job done. Alex Ovechkin, the list goes on and on. So I think you're right from that perspective. While I bring up the clutch factor, I think you can grow into that. And I think it comes with confidence, maybe. The Capitals are a really good comparable. They win that series against Pittsburgh, and the rest was history, right? So I think for the Maple Leafs, you start with baby steps. You try to win a series. And I think that builds the confidence of an organization and a team, no?
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the timeline is, but the culture, it takes time to develop that culture. And again, I played in Florida, and we were 3 hours south of Tampa Bay. And I'm telling you, there was no culture there. And we had no chance of winning. We knew it. We were there. We were always booking tee times. Guys are, you know, getting their family vacations all teed up come Christmas time, because we knew, and that was just the culture of the team. So good, bad, or indifferent, that's how it was at that time too. So it starts from the top and instilling that winning culture and surrounding the team, and it trickles down to the rest of the team. So Toronto, they're still in the beginning stages of that, but they're a young, talented team. No one's doubting that, but they have to bring it come playoff time, and that's the criticism, and I understand that.
I would love to know more about Olli Jokinen and the Big Back Meals, right, from his clip a couple years back. Olli Jokinen was a stud, by the way.
It's funny. My dad could not pronounce Olli Jokinen, so he just called him Olikin. So he's like, oh, tell Olikin he's got to pass you the puck. I'm like, okay, Dad, I'm going to go up as a rookie and tell Olikin that you said pass me the puck. Okay, great.
That's tremendous. That is tremendous. I know I teed it up before the break, so we can get into it. The Maple Leafs offseason, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of time together here in Hockey Central over the next month to mull over some of the moves and some they don't make. But, you know, thinking about it the last little while, we hear Tyler Bertuzzi's name linked by Elliot Friedman earlier today. I think Connor Garland's another name to watch at the Arizona Coyotes. In a perfect world, would love to have Seth Jones in a Maple Leafs uniform. I don't know if it works, but is there any guys that come to mind that you can say, hey, you know, wouldn't be a bad idea to go after them, and the price seems pretty good too?
Yeah, I think you got to get a good, it starts off the goaltending, right? And you got to bring in a good, backup solution or 1B solution. And to, this is nothing to slight, Jack Campbell, but if Jack Campbell gets hurt and he's had some history of injury problems, you have to have a guy capable of doing a 10-15 game stretch. So for me, a guy like Peter Mrazek, and also on the back end too, what's going to be the plan for Riley? And you have to say, if Riley's not re-signing, well, what are we going to do? Who's going to bring in? So why not go after a Dougie Hamilton as insurance policy? You saw the St. Louis Blues do that, where they traded for Justin Falk as an insurance policy for Pietrangelo, and he steps in for his spot too. So again, I'm not sure how the numbers add up, but you need some guys. Why not a guy like Savard? Why not a guy like Cogliano? Bring in an Eric Halla. Why not an Alex Chiasson, a big strong body that can play your second line power play and tap in some pucks? Maybe a Trevor Lewis. So guys that are on that bottom six that can be a Blake Coleman, or that can be a Barclay Goodrow. I'm looking for guys like that. Or maybe if you get a Thomas Tatar at a $1.5 or $2.5 million to slide in and play a second line left wing. So it's going to be tough because they have some money constraints, and you got to convince some of these veteran guys to come in and, take a bit of a haircut here. But again, you got to bring in veteran guys that can do the job or have done the job before.
I love the you bringing up Tatar, and great homework, by the way. You killed it in a quick segment.
Took me two minutes.
You smoked it, man. Yeah. You absolutely smoked it. But I was talking about this on Twitter, as you know, like last week. Like Thomas Tatar, somebody is going to hit the jackpot with this guy. I would love to know what Thomas Tatar did outside of the analytics conversation, which you're about to bring up, by the way. What he did, considering the output he had in a couple seasons where it seemed very destined that he was signing long-term with Montreal, and now he couldn't sniff the ice in the Stanley Cup final and the playoffs in general. I think some team's going to sign this guy for $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million on a one-year show-me type deal, and I think he's going to light it up, Stewie.
Yeah, maybe people got sick of him walking around saying Tomas Tata everywhere he went. I don't know. But again, he had a bit of an off season, but he still had 30 points. And, you know, he scored 47 goals the last two games. He's a 25 goal guy. And if you can get him on the cheap, I know he's going to be coming back down from his $5.3 million cap hit. So if you can get him for cheap, this guy's he was, speaking of analytics, I think he was one of the top neutral zone or entry zone guys on Montreal the last couple of years, too. So again, he probably just had it was a gut feeling why they decided to go with someone else. But this guy's a capable guy. He's proven 176 goals in 600 games, almost 400 points. If you're looking for some scoring and a motivated guy, Thomas Tatar is your guy.
My dark horse team for Tatar, and there's a correlation with Kenny Holland, is the Edmonton Oilers. I just think you have to look for value deals, especially in this flat cap world, and we'll see where it goes. But I like you bringing up his name. With that in mind, we'll hit the break. Other side, we have a very special happy birthday to wrap up this edition and this week of Hockey Central, so don't go anywhere. It's Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart on Twitter, at the Golden Muzzy, at Stu Monroe, and you're listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, wrapping this edition, this Friday edition of Hockey Central, Nick Alberga and Anthony Stewart would like to Wish one Jeff Merrick a happy birthday. He's been a fantastic mentor to me in my career. And Stewie, you obviously work very, very closely with Merrick, a hockey encyclopedia, I like to call him.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's been great and very instrumental for my success. And I remember, you know, I saw him at the arena one time as, you know, I was taking my kids for a skate. He's like, hey, you should really pursue this. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you'd be really great. So I wasn't really confident my first couple, you know, months on the job. And he actually, you know, pushed me to be a little bit better every day. He gave me my own segments to his Fast Five. So
yeah.
I owe a lot to my success to Jeff Merrick and happy birthday. What is it? He's, I think he's what, 36, right? Same age as me.
Yeah, 37,
so,
I think.
Happy birthday. And yeah, and he's one of the best in the business. You ask him about any hockey player, he'll tell you about the time, you know, when he played in the Pee Wee tournament, or he played in junior, or who his teammate was as well. So happy birthday, Jeff. From everybody at Sportsnet, we love you, buddy.
Very well said. To wrap, Stewie, I brought it up earlier. Take me through the mentality of a player in an off season at a trade deadline. Like, how you feeling?
Party hardy for a couple weeks, and then you get back to it, right? And you get back, start getting, doing some therapy, some stretching, some yoga. But now you got to start keeping up with these young bucks. Before, you wouldn't start skating till August or late July. Guys are skating now. Guys are going to take 1 or 2 weeks off, and they're getting back at it because some guys are coming up for big seasons, big contracts. Come October, they're going to be ready to go. So I would not be surprised to see a very fast-paced opening night just because how fast the game is these days.
Big question. Will Merrick go all Kucherov today for his birthday?
Well, of course. He's got to show those tattoos off. So he's there at 10 right now in Scoville.
I love that. I'm turning 32 in about a month, August 7th. And I will go full Kucherov. No jurors, no tarp, a couple pops. You know, enjoy life a bit because we're on the mend, Ontario. It's fantastic. Stewie, it's been great working with you. And we'll be back on Monday, okay?
Absolutely. We'll see you then.
There you have it, the one and only Anthony Stewart. Many thanks to Luke Fox of Sportsnet.ca for dropping by. Matt Marchese, Dylan Brown, Lance Kennedy. Great, excellent work behind the scenes. For Anthony Stewart, I'm Nick Alberga. Have a great weekend, and don't forget, we'll be back on Monday. The NHL offseason, sure to heat up.